Okay, welcome to the December Citizens Climate Lobby call. My name is Mark Reynolds. I'm a member of the CCL staff, and I'm honored to often get a chance to host our monthly call. What's going to be happening is in just a few minutes, I'll be introducing our guest speaker. We are very thrilled and honored to have Dr. Carolyn Wu. She gave a keynote at one of our regional conferences, but we're really happy we can get her to a broader CCL audience. After that, I do believe there'll be time for some questions in the chat. Then we'll go over some of the things that I'm really excited to share with you that have happened since last month's call and go over what we're doing this month, really a big push from now till the end of the year. You know, I always like to let our guests know a little bit about the people that she's going to be speaking to. And Dr. Wu has been to one of our regional conferences, I think is pretty familiar with the organization. But one of the things I love this time of year is we've started our year in appeal on Giving Tuesday. And a lot of people like just to add in one or two statements about why they donate. And I just grabbed a page of that, of five short statements people made. And I thought it would give our guest a little bit more of an insight of who she's talking to. So Suzanne said, in this time of extreme polarization, distrust, and incivility, CCL's principled adherence to respectful, thoughtful, caring communication and nonpartisan citizenship is a beacon of hope for progress towards a clean energy economy, carbon drawdown, and a sustainable human presence on the planet. I'm honored to be part of the CCL community. Nancy said, for inspiration, I keep thinking of my deep attachment to the northern landscape of ecosystems, salmon, spruce forests, tundra, glaciers, and snowy winters. It is my responsibility to try to protect these marvels for future generations, and CCL is a force to do that. Paul says, CCL reminds me that we all make a difference, and sharing that difference with others is a key to starting a landslide, tsunami of action. Just notice my metaphors are all climate disasters. Help Mr. Rogers. Bruce said, this group is the very embodiment of human decency. I support all you are doing. And Suzanne said, thank you for your amazing work, from educating to engaging the public with our elected officials to working across the aisle to make a difference on climate change in this critical time. So Dr. Wu, I just wanted to share a few of those. I thought I'd kind of give you a flavor of the people who will be on the call today. So Dr. Carolyn Wu is currently a Distinguished President's Fellow for Global Development at Purdue University. She served as President and CEO of Catholic Relief Services from 2012 to 2016. She was featured in the May-June 2013 issue of Foreign Policy as one of the 500 most powerful people on the planet and one of only 33 that was in the category of a force for good. Dr. Wu, we are so honored to have you on the call today. Thank you so much and welcome. There we go. Now you're unmuted. There we go. Yep, now we can, yes.
All right. I also sent in a PowerPoint presentation to CCL, and I'm going to be speaking from it. Do you know if this would be shown as I'm speaking? Okay, great. I see it. Okay, great. I have about 15 minutes and about 15 slides, so we'll go a minute a slide. So what I'm going to talk about is what's called the Vatican Energy Transition Dialogues. Next page, please. Next slide. Okay, so this explains what it is. It's hosted by a division of the Vatican, which is called the Dicastery for Promoting Integral Human Development. It's the division of the Vatican that deals with poverty, environmental justice, immigration, and so on. So it's hosted by the Vatican. It's financially sponsored by the University of Notre Dame. We've actually had two dialogues, one in 2018 and one in 2019. The audience is really the CEOs from oil and gas companies, not all of them, you will see a list later on, and also from very large investment firms, both investment managers as well as what we call asset owners, like pension funds. In 2019, there was about $20 trillion represented by the people there. And then we had a few renewable companies, insurance company, and also multilateral institutions such as the World Bank, the Potsdam Institute, and other watchdog organizations such as the Carbon Tracker. 2018 was our first gathering. We had 40 people from 17 organizations. If a CEO is coming, the person can bring a staff member or two. If the CEO is not coming, there will be no representation. We did not allow for substitution. After 2018, the people who were there wanted to have a 2019, a second convening, and this time around, we doubled the number of organizations. The next overhead, please. So in terms of the oil and gas companies, we have CEOs from the companies which were listed. They're very big. It's not just U.S. firms, but there are a number of European, like Eni is Italian, Equinor is Norwegian, British Petroleum is British, Royal Dutch Shell is also actually British, and Total is French. We did not have the Saudi Aramco or Sinopec, which is from China. They had signed up to come, but last minute did not feel comfortable. You see, we have investment companies also there. There are investment managers like BlackRock or Hermes, but they're also asset owners. So the pension fund is CalSTRS, I think, which is from the teachers union in California. We also have the Japanese pension fund, which is GFIP. ABP is a pension fund, and I think it's from the Netherlands, and so on. So, and then we had Aon, which is global insurance, and Vision and Pattern Energies, renewables, and then civil society representation you can see there. The next overhead, please. So you say, what are the objectives? And the objectives are actually quite qualitative, because we didn't really want to tell companies specifically, you know, how they should do their transition. And of course, transition is from carbon intensive fuels to clean energy. We didn't want to set for them that in 15 years, this is what they should do. These are their goals. The whole idea was that they come in as CEOs of their companies, but they leave as elders of the human community, that they understand more broadly what is at stake and what they can do. Idea is, how can we approach energy transition at greater speed and scale? How can we collaborate and dialogue so that perhaps we could free up some of the constraints for each other? A lot of times companies are reluctant to move too fast because they're concerned about investor reaction. Renewables are generally less profitable than oil. So having the investors there, hopefully maybe that it could relax some of those constraints. For the second convening, which was June of 2019, we actually have two outcomes. One is that the attendees, the participating CEOs, signed a statement on supporting carbon pricing. They also, and so every one of the oil companies signed on, and except for two investment companies, they also signed on. Secondly, we have a joint statement calling for proper financial disclosure. The third is that we also spend some time on this whole concept of the just transition. We were not able to converge, I mean, just because the topic is quite new and quite amorphous at that point. And in fact, the third convening, which will be in June of 2020, will focus on principles for just transition for carbon pricing. So those are the three things. And I'm going to go into greater depth on the statement for carbon pricing, the statement for financial disclosure. So may I have the next? Okay, here it is. Before we went into each of those issues, carbon pricing and disclosure, there was a preamble for the group. And you could read this for yourself. Why don't you just take a minute to read it and highlight a few. All right, so from this preamble, just a few things. It talks about a significant acceleration. By the way, these are signed by the CEOs of these companies. So they recognize it need a significant acceleration of what we're doing towards a low carbon future, and that they need to take large scale action. They need additional technological solution to reach below 2 degrees centigrade goal. And that this is both for human and economic well-being, recognizing that humanity is a single whole. All right. So this is the wording that comes from the preamble, and they end up by saying, we embrace this challenge. Right? So the next three slides give you a little bit of details on the carbon pricing statement. Again, just take a minute, half a minute to read it. So here, what you want to see is that it did call for economically meaningful action. So not just some token amount, if it is carbon tax, but meaningful measures. The second thing is that it's actually supporting a range of carbon pricing mechanisms, not just the carbon dividend, but also regulatory measures are included in that statement. That it needs to be significant enough to change behavior, and they call for both supporting economic growth as well as minimizing the cost to vulnerable communities. So both of those, the human and the economic flourishing. The next slide, please. So take a minute to read. So this emphasizes again that whatever the solutions are, we need to provide assistance to those who will be negatively affected and most vulnerable, but at the same time, also delivering resources for innovation and investments in new technologies, which is not surprising to see these two-pronged emphasis. And the third of the carbon pricing statement. So here it says that achieving these outcomes, of course, we need government policy and we need transparency, right? Because we generate possibly a lot of revenues if it is the carbon dividend, carbon taxing approach. So we need transparency, but at the same time, we also need advocacy. A government alone is not going to get to that point, but that we need advocacy and ongoing engagement of civil society, of government, of the investment community, and of consumers. So next slide, please. So here is a statement from Pope Francis supporting carbon pricing, and I'm just gonna let you read it. So this statement from Pope Francis is probably not surprising. It's very much in line with Laudato Si. But there are two things which should be noted. In Laudato Si, he actually said, we don't want these market mechanisms that play games. And this was, you know, in 2015. And the concern at that point was, if we have a lot of cap and trade programs, does it just really push the costs around without decreasing the carbon emissions? So there was actually a statement that these type of trading mechanisms may not be what we want. Now you can see he's actually backed off that, I think, because I think there's evidence to show that, you know, the different mechanisms like cap and trade and possibly carbon pricing could possibly reduce carbon emissions. That is not just another one of these tools for gaming. In former statements, he's actually said we need to stop all exploration, no more oil out of the ground. He actually backed off that a little bit because the concern of is about chaotic transition. That if we often stop all exploration, you could actually get into a scenario where those who need access to energy do not have it, or that there are just some companies like Saudi Aramco and other oil companies that immediately jack up the price while others hold back. And so the whole idea is we need a transition which is definitely rigorous and at large scale, but that it's thoughtful also and it is not chaotic. So in this carbon pricing statement by the Pope, you actually don't see those two things, which is a critique of any type of mechanisms and also to leave all oil in the ground. Okay, so now we move into the financial disclosure piece. So I have five short slides. Just go ahead and read this first one. So here the first statement about disclosure is that companies need to provide clear and relevant information about how they're planning that transition, like what would be their investment posture, what they are putting into fossil fuel exploration versus renewable. The key is that the information provided cannot be just a lot of good words, but that it is meaningful, it is relevant. The next overhead, please. The second one is that it's pretty straightforward, that encouraging companies to use a framework which is already well developed. That framework was proposed by the Task Force on Climate-Related Financial Disclosures. The Global Task Force was headed by Mark Carney, who was the head of the Bank of England. And in the US, effort was headed by Michael Bloomberg. And basically that framework asks companies to disclose what is the governance process for this transition, what is their strategy for the transition, what is the risk involved, and what are the metrics and targets. So this is a framework now, which is fairly well developed and is now in the second year, moving into the third year of implementation. So not just again any disclosure, but that properly sort of structured. The third slide, please. I'll let you read for a minute. This is pretty straightforward, is that companies need to use a range of scenarios to describe how they would get there. So, you know, if they have multiple objectives, they also have uncertainty that they face, what do they anticipate the outcome to be to the actions that they're taking? And scenarios basically embed uncertainty in it. The next slide, please. Just go ahead and read it. So a lot of words there, but this point is basically board of directors of companies need to be involved. That, you know, from having formal committees of the board that oversee energy transition, risk opportunities, and so on. But the main operating point here is that board of directors need to be formally and systematically involved. The last slide, please, on disclosure. Here is very simple, is that investors also need to pay attention. They need to know how companies are doing. They need to read the statements from companies. They need to have policies and so on about whether they would invest in companies which are doing poorly in transition or those who are aggressive and proactive. So the fifth statement is really investors must be involved. Those of you who have pension funds, those of you who are participating in any way in these managed funds need to ask these questions and in fact advocate for policies that reward companies doing good things. So let's go to the next slide. This is Pope Francis' statement to support this disclosure. This is a fairly new point for the Pope, and Laudato Si, coming off the 2008 financial crisis. So, you know, that encyclical was released about 7 years after that, and, you know, probably started writing about 5 years after that. So the focus on the financial markets at that point was that they should not be greedy. They should not, you know, put profits over people and planet. This one now, as you can tell, is more positive in tone. I think understanding the role that corporations can play in enabling the transition, but that it needs to be transparent in that in those disclosures. And finally, the last overhead. Okay, here we actually did not have a statement. We did not have a signed statement, public statement on just transition, but we talked a lot about it. And Pope Francis basically said this was called for in the preamble in the Paris Agreement. And it's really about looking at the people who will bear the cost of energy transitions. Some of them are coal workers. Some of them are the communities related to them or the secondary industries related to them. But there are other industries which will be affected, people who work in carbon intensive industries and so on. And so the whole idea is we cannot just pay attention to the environment and not pay attention to the people who will be paying the price for this. And as I say, this will be our third, the theme for our third gathering. And actually CCL is also participating. We have a working group to work on what should be the principles for just transition related to carbon pricing. So CCL is part of that working group. And the final slide is really very a positive statement from the Pope. So I'm done with my the talking part. And I don't know what time you have allocated for
Q&A. Yeah, we've got another about 7 minutes for Q&A, Dr. Wu. So Ricky's been monitoring the questions in the chat. Do you have a place you want to start with that, Ricky?
Yeah, actually, we've got two really good questions, Mark. And if anyone has any other questions, you can continue to put them in the chat. We'll try to get to them. The first question, Dr. Wu, great work on what you guys have been working on for the past couple of years. And I guess the people want to know a little bit, if you could speak to the strategy of, you know, gaining this consensus agreement, and maybe if the future sessions with in the Vatican with the CEOs, if that will involve more with CEOs making specific commitments within the organizations.
Yeah. If you mean specific commitments, means that it has numbers and they converge on a timeline and what they would do by a certain period and so on. No, that's not our objective. The Vatican is not the right place for that type of very, very specific agreements. And in fact, you know, you could imagine that there could be issues related to antitrust. And it's not the format. And it's not a negotiation sort of forum. You know, and in fact, the CEOs themselves are there and they are not into sort of these specific quantifiable targets. What our objective was really was two things. One is to encourage the people who attend these CEOs. A lot of times, you know, we use the premise they're not bad people, they're not greedy people, but they're people who operate with a set of constraints. whether those constraints are self-imposed or they're real, they are real enough to set the parameters for their decisions and their actions. So CEOs worry about, you know, shareholders, they worry about what they should do with the oil that is in their asset base. And so they have different worries, they have different constraints. The coming together is actually say, how real are those constraints? Could very large investors actually play a role in terms of giving cover to some of these companies to move faster towards renewables? And so it's really through this, whether there could be collaboration actually. Actually those are very interesting questions. The second one is for them to realize that they're very powerful platforms. And whether they are using those platforms to the most impact. If you, for example, you don't believe in the damages of the damage of carbon emission until you have a child or grandchild who actually have a health issue related to pollution, for example. And then all of a sudden it becomes very real. And so the whole idea really is whether the people could be moved, having a session with the Pope inside the Vatican, is really, can we be in that situation and there together with each other? You know, first night is dinner, the second day is a full day plus dinner, the third day is half a day. So they're in session with each other a long time. So during that period of time is to understand what they can do really, and that they are the elders of the human community with very strong leverage on where this problem goes. So the second thing is really, in the Pope's word, conversion. It's really a change in heart so that we could have different priorities than we did before. Or where we said, well, I think I could delay this by 3 years, to say, well, I don't think so. I think that, we may have no more than 1 year to move forward. I mean, you would like to say immediately is good. But it's really about the conversion for people to rethink their priorities. The third one is, we're not naive. We know the fact that the CEO of Exxon signed on to this doesn't mean that all of the lobbyists associated with Exxon all immediately line up in place to support this. But we thought this is a good start. So for example, I would go into Oklahoma City. I gave a talk to the Catholic business people and I talk about this. And I said, well, I know a lot of you are sort of undecided, or you feel ambiguous about this. You don't know, how much you want to believe in this. But I just want you to know your CEO signed on to this, right? I mean, and so in some ways, it's very important to give an opening to talk about this issue in a way which is not just, you come from a company and from, the top to the bottom, everybody is against this. It's just to actually open up the thing and say, this represents $20 trillion of capital in the system, and they sign on to this. And so I think is creating some opening into a community that is not likely to embrace this. So those would be our three objectives.
Yeah, that's a fantastic presentation and a great answer to that question, Dr. Wu. Thank you so much. If you want to stay on for the next 10 minutes, we have a few things to report. If you have to drop off, we understand, but thank you so much. And if you get a chance, on behalf of all of us, could you thank the Pope for his extraordinary leadership on this?
Well, I would. Thank you very much. I'm going to drop off just because I thought this was at 12 o'clock, but anyway, so I will move on to my next commitment.
Thank you, Dr. Wu. Thank you so much. Wow.
Thank you. And thank you. Look forward to working with CCL this convening.
And we look forward to that very much also. Thank you so much.
All right.
Okay, great. Wow. So some really big things happened since last month's call. If you remember, I know it seems like years ago, but last month during the call, we were in DC for our November lobby day. And the most people that have ever come to a lobby day in the past were 550 people last year, and there were actually 823 people who came to DC, which has allowed us to see 486 offices. That's a lot of offices to get to, which also means last year with just over 1,600 meetings was the most number of meetings we'd ever had with congressional offices. We're year to date at 1,725 meetings with offices from the House and Senate. That is really, really something. There were 159 students at Lobby Day. There were, like there was in June, a lot of people who identified themselves as right of center and people of all of communities of color. So November is starting to look very much like June in reflecting our entire country and making a big impact in reaching out to people. There were also 59 op-eds last month. That's one of the highest totals we've had all year. So congratulations to everybody who reached out to your newspaper, put together a good piece and got it published. Great work there. Also, since last month's call, we started our annual giving campaign on Giving Tuesday. And we started with a goal of $500,000. And then we wanted to raise $100,000 on Giving Tuesday. And there were some glitches on the website, and I apologize for that. So it was hard for some of you to donate who wanted to. That's all been straightened out. So if you didn't get a chance to donate on Giving Tuesday, you can still go to the site. We went a little over $100,000. I know for some of you, the $500,000 might seem modest compared to some previous years. Because last year we had 10 people who'd committed, 100 people who'd committed $10,000 to create a $1 million match. So this might seem modest compared to last year, but this is ambitious and important. $500,000 is 10% of our annual budget. So we're already at $271,169. So we're well past halfway there. But please keep talking to everybody you know, inviting everybody to participate. There are 99 people, including me, who created Facebook fundraisers. And we got the first check-in for $49,000, which covers the first 2 weeks of November. So if you're one of those 99 people who did a Facebook fundraiser, thank you for doing that. I'm at a little over $1,200 on my goal to make $2,000 on my Facebook fundraiser. So everybody, please keep sharing that. And you can check on the website, at $284,000 as of this morning. So Ricky got a more recent update than I did. So what are we doing this month? First, I love that this is a follow-up. There were so many people who asked for Dr. Wu's presentation. And as we said in the chat, that is available on community, on the website for speakers. So you can go out and make presentations. So one of the first things we're asking people to do is to engage local faith communities. This definitely falls into that category of trusted messenger. So, you know, when you have a place where people do trust their community, if we can get those local communities of faith speaking up, national communities of faith speaking up, it makes a big difference. It was like Dr. Wu was talking about the presentation she made in Oklahoma City saying, listen, your company, your CEO is signed on this. And when the faith-based communities do, it's a really, really big deal. Also, we want to have a big push for letters to the editor between now and the end of the year. We haven't done that for a long time. And I want to talk to particularly those of you who've never been published. There are people in your chapter who are really, really good at this. And one of the things that I think it's important for all of us to understand is you're getting your message in front of hundreds of thousands of people and sometimes millions. So it's a free way of getting our message out there. And if you've never been published, it's also kind of cool seeing your name in the newspaper. So please, everybody go for it. And if you particularly support the people in the chapter who've never been published, I think that's a really big and great opportunity. Also, the third action is to continue pushing on our year-end appeal. That's primarily what we're doing in Canada, also to fund certain things, but a lot to help people get to our next national Canadian conference. Okay, our speaker for next month is an organization called Better Angels. I think you'll be very excited about that, about work that's happening across the aisle. Better Angels is a fantastic organization. Last thing I want to do is share two things with you. One is, over the holidays, Marshall and I would like you to thank your families for supporting you in the work that you do here. There's a lot of you who put an incredibly large amount of time into this organization. And if you get a chance over the holidays, just on behalf of all of us, to thank your family for being supportive of all the amazing stuff that you do here and the time you put in, Marshall and I would be really, really grateful for you extending that thanks to your family. And the other thing is over the last 10 years, on almost every call, emphasize something that a volunteer had done that just in a day in, day out, week in, wake out moment, just kind of gives me a pinch me moment of I'm so pleased to be part of this organization. But I want to share one from a staff member this time. You know, Steve Volk has been our director of communications for 10 years. And 2 years ago, there was a volunteer whose writing and thinking was so extraordinary that we added a second person to Steve's department, which we really needed some help in the communications department because we weren't talking about the 20 chapters that were here when Steve started, but over 500. So we added Flannery, who was in her mid-20s at that point. Steve came to me in October and he said, you know, 10 years ago, I was the right person to head CCL's communication. But in today's world, and with Flannery's skill set, she's the right person. And what I'd like to do is, I'd like to swap roles. I would like Flannery to be the director of CCL Communications, and I would like to be the associate working under her. It was a brilliant move on his part, and I still was shocked when I heard him say it out loud in front of the rest of the staff. I've never been in a company where somebody who's 65 years old and who's had a very long, successful career here said, I would like to have the person that works for me to take over the department, and I would like to work for her. So, Steve, good on you. All right, everybody. Thank you so much for all you're doing. We'll see you in January for the call. Let's keep a big push on from now till the end of the year. Thank you for all you're doing. And Ricky will let the camera wander around the chapter so you can say goodbye to everybody.